So, imagine you're carrying this really heavy bucket of water to a desperately thirsty village.
Right.
But every single time you fill it up at the well, water just pours out the sides.
Like a massive leak.
Exactly. And you basically have a choice. You could either spend like an absolute fortune buying more and more water to constantly top off this leaky bucket, or, and this sounds obvious, you can finally set it down, look at the bottom, and just patch the holes.
Yeah, you fix the bucket first.
Right. And today, we're taking a deep dive into an incredibly fascinating document that is, well, it's essentially a map of the holes in one of the biggest municipal buckets in the world.
It really is a phenomenal piece of analysis.
Yeah.
We are looking at the Los Angeles Efficiency Docket 2026 Pareto Policy Study.
Quite a title.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. But the mission here is vital for, anyone interested in governance or management. We are exploring how a massive city with a correspondingly massive budget can dramatically improve its public services without spending a single extra dime of taxpayer money.
Which is wild, because usually when we talk about city government, the conversation instantly devolves into this binary battle over funding.
Oh, absolutely. It's always taxes versus cuts.
Exactly. Someone says we need to raise taxes to fund a program,
Right.
and someone else says we need to slash the budget entirely. We're not taking a side on that political debate today, by the way,
Yeah, not at all.
because this study uses a completely different lens. It uses this term, Pareto inefficiency. So, what does that actually mean when you apply it to a city the size of Los Angeles?
Well, in strict economic theory, Pareto efficiency is a state where you cannot make any one person better off without making someone else worse off.
Okay.
It's like this concept of perfect resource allocation. But, true, flawless Pareto efficiency is practically impossible to definitively prove in the absolute chaos of municipal government.
Sure, there are too many moving parts.
Right. So the authors of this study adopted a standard that is much narrower, and critically, it's auditable.
Meaning they can actually track the math.
Exactly. For the sake of this docket, inefficiency means wasted capacity, weak enforcement, idle money, or high-cost deployment that can be completely reallocated without cutting the underlying service goal.
I see. So, meaning we aren't cutting the service itself, we're just stopping the waste that prevents the service from actually happening.
That is the core principle. And the headline finding from this study is really what makes it such a compelling read.
Yeah.
The largest inefficiencies they found across the city aren't these like exotic, scandalous policy failures where someone is running off with suitcases of cash.
It's not a movie.
No, it's not. They are coordination
There are
failures.
nation failures.
Yeah. The city is already paying for a specific public goal, but the delivery system is so poorly designed that it literally leaks the value out before the residents ever see the results.
Oh man, so it's pouring water into that leaky bucket and assuming the only logical solution is to go buy a bigger hose. We aren't talking about spare change or rounding errors here. I mean, looking at the docket, this study has identified eight priority candidates containing over $348 million in identified costs or idle capital.
Yeah, the 348 million is, well, the pattern underlying that number is the real story.
Also.
Because as we go through these findings, you see the exact same structural issues over and over. Beds are funded but sit unused.
Right.
Tenant protections exist on paper but die in the administrative process. Millions in cash are legally available but just sit totally dormant in forgotten accounts.
Wow.
High-cost aviation assets are flying low-priority missions. I mean, it's a crisis of administration, not necessarily a crisis of intention.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So let's start with where this administrative crisis hits the hardest. There's a section of the study dealing with what is essentially the illusion of action.
Yes. The housing and social safety net section.
Right. The city is spending massive amounts of money and passing these sweeping laws, but the lack of basic coordination is causing the system to fail the city's most vulnerable people. The first major example is interim housing beds.
The numbers here are just
They
staggering.
really are. From fiscal year 2019 to 2023, the estimated cost of unused interim beds was $218 million.
And we have to be very precise about the mechanics of that figure. That is $218 million spent on shelter capacity that remained physically empty.
Wait, literally empty.
Literally empty during a multi-year period when, people seeking beds on the streets could not reliably secure a placement.
That is insane.
The physical supply was there, leased and ready. The human demand was tragically obvious, but the two sides simply could not connect.
Okay, I'm sorry, but you cannot just call $218 million in empty beds during a literal homelessness crisis a coordination failure.
I know.
I mean, that sounds like a catastrophic systemic breakdown of government. How are the authors justifying that kind of sterile language for something so massive?
It sounds clinical, I agree. But coordination failure is actually the most accurate diagnosis of the root cause here.
Really?
Yeah, because the breakdown wasn't political or financial. The money was appropriated by the council.
Okay.
The physical beds were successfully purchased or leased by the city. The service providers were contracted. The failure occurred purely in the administrative plumbing. Yeah. The city and its network of providers were operating without a centralized, real-time bed ledger.
Oh, wow. So it's like trying to run a massive hotel without a computer system to tell the front desk which rooms are currently clean and available.
That is the perfect analogy. If a caseworker is standing on the street with an unhoused individual at like 10 p.m., but they have to make 6 phone calls to different nonprofits just to find out if a bed is open.
The system breaks down.
Exactly. The system breaks down. Mm. Furthermore, the contracts the city signed with these providers paid for the availability of a bed.
Wait, they paid just for the bed existing?
Yes. They did not measure actual occupancy, nor did they measure the rate at which those individuals were moved into permanent housing.
So the provider gets paid whether the bed has a person in it or not.
Correct.
The system literally has no financial or operational urgency built into it to actually put a head on a pillow.
The incentive structure was entirely detached from the desired outcome.
That is wild.
So the proposed Pareto-style fix here isn't to ask for another $200 million in the next budget. It is brilliantly boring.
Brilliantly boring. I like that. What is it?
Create one real-time citywide bed ledger. Publish strict data quality rules so every single provider is updating their inventory identically.
Okay, that makes sense.
And shift the service contracts so that providers are measured and compensated based on actual occupancy and successful transition to permanent housing.
So you fix the spreadsheet, rewrite the contract language, and suddenly the money actually does what it's supposed to do.
Exactly.
That is wild. But what happens when the city doesn't even need to provide a physical asset like a bed, but just needs to enforce its own rules?
Right.
Because that brings us to the Tenant Anti-Harassment Ordinance, or TEHOO. The city passed this law to protect renters. But look at the operational reality.
Right, the enforcement funnel.
Yeah. Over 11,000 complaints were submitted by the public.
Which is a massive influx of people asking the city for the protection they were promised.
Huge. But out of those 11,000 complaints, only 23 were referred for stronger enforcement consideration.
That's 23.
And out of those 23, exactly 4 citations were issued. 4.
Yeah.
Out of 11,000. That is a 0.036% citation rate.
It's basically zero.
If you look at the actual source document, there's this graphic showing this enforcement funnel. And the percent bars for TEHO are drawn intentionally, like incredibly tiny, just to visually emphasize how rare it is for a complaint to actually result in enforcement.
It is a striking visual. And it highlights a very old rule of public administration, which is that an unenforced law is essentially just a taxpayer-funded public relations campaign.
Wow.
The ordinance promises a shield for tenants, but the mechanical reality is that enforcement rarely advances beyond sending an educational letter to a landlord.
Which is basically the city sending a note saying, hey, please don't harass your tenant. Sincerely, Los Angeles.
Exactly.
So why does it fail so completely? I mean, is the legal standard of proof just impossibly high?
Well, the standard of proof is a factor, sure, but the real bottleneck is the administrative pipeline.
The plumbing again.
But I'm plumbing again.
Yeah.
Currently, the Los Angeles Housing Department, which fields these complaints, doesn't actually have the teeth it needs to enforce them. They cannot just issue a citation.
Wait, really?
No. They have to build this massive case and refer it to the city attorney for prosecution.
Oh, I see.
Which is a massive legal hurdle for an overburdened legal system.
So the complaint just dies on the vine because the administrative burden of punishing the violation is just way too high.
Yes. So the Pareto fix here recognizes that you don't need to rewrite the law. You need to build a better pipeline.
Right.
The recommendation is to give the LA Housing Department direct administrative citation authority.
Oh, so they can just fine them directly.
Exactly. Give them the power to issue a fine, the same way the city issues a parking ticket. You publish the case protocols and you staff a dedicated enforcement unit within the Housing Department. you bypass the legal bottleneck entirely.
Okay, so we have a clear picture of value leaking out of well-intentioned social policies. But let's pivot.
Let's do it.
Because the study moves from broken safety nets to the absurd misallocation of raw capital. We are talking about forgotten money and, quite literally, misused toys.
Oh, the special funds?
Yes. The controller's office identified $80 million in legally available special funds that were just sitting idle in 2026.
From a municipal finance perspective, this is one of the most frustrating findings in the entire docket. You have $80 million just sitting there at a time when service backlogs are growing across the city and the general fund is under extreme fiscal stress.
Right. How does a city just lose track of $80 million?
Honestly, bureaucratic inertia.
Inertia.
Yeah. Special funds are often created for very specific, narrowly defined purposes, maybe a specific infrastructure fee or like a localized grant.
Okay.
But over time, leadership changes, priorities shift, and if the department overseeing that fund doesn't actively deploy the capital, it just accumulates. It becomes this orphan pool of money.
So these idle special funds are essentially like municipal gift cards.
Gift cards, yes.
The money is locked in. It can only be spent at one specific store or for one specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But the department just forgot they had the gift card in their wallet, so the cash is just depreciating while the city complains about being broke.
That captures the dynamic perfectly. And because of the legal restrictions on special funds, the city council can't just easily grab that money and use it to fix potholes.
So what's the fix?
The proposed solution is to implement an annual idle fund sweep.
A sweep?
Yeah. You legally reassign those dormant balances to eligible high-priority uses, or, at the very least, you force the department managers to provide formal written findings explaining exactly why they are hoarding the money.
Make them defend it.
Right. Yeah. You force them to defend the inaction.
Which leads right into another area of massive misallocation, which is LAPD helicopter deployment.
Oh, this one is fascinating.
It is. The public record analyzed here shows that a high-cost aviation asset, a police helicopter, is flying 61% of its flight time on non-high-priority incidents.
This is a classic Pareto inefficiency candidate.
Yeah, 51%.
Right, because aviation assets are inherently incredibly expensive to operate. You're paying for specialized aviation fuel, relentless mechanical maintenance, and highly trained tactical flight personnel.
And 61% of the time, they're in the air for calls that are not classified as high-priority emergencies. I mean, they're using a multi-million-dollar helicopter as a default patrol tool.
That is the core of the inefficiency. When you deploy a high-cost asset for a low-priority threshold, you are burning capital that could be deployed elsewhere.
Right.
The Pareto standard here isn't about abolishing the aviation unit. It's about mathematical discipline.
So we aren't getting rid of the helicopters?
No. The proposed correction is to strictly restrict the dispatch criteria and report the flight purposes publicly. Critically, the city needs to mathematically compare the marginal benefit of that helicopter flight against lower cost response options.
Right, asking the obvious operational questions, like, could a drone have done the job for a fraction of the cost?
Exactly.
Could a standard patrol car have done it?
You preserve the helicopter for true life or death emergencies, but you stop burning aviation fuel to do a noise complaint check.
You preserve the capability, but you remove the mechanism causing the financial leak.
And this brings us to a really critical transition. Because when a city misallocates its funds, when it leaves $80 million on a gift card, when it fails to proactively enforce its laws,
that burden has to go somewhere. Exactly.
Yeah.
That operational burden doesn't just vanish into thin air. It falls entirely on the shoulders of the city workforce. And that creates this vicious, incredibly expensive cycle of reactive crisis management.
You really see the system straining under its own weight when you look at the city-wide overtime controls.
Yeah, the overtime numbers are nuts.
The audit reviewed 5 fiscal years. And the city paid out over $2 billion in overtime.
$2 billion over 5 years.
Yes.
And obviously, overtime pays time and a half, so it's a massive financial drain. But, I mean, why not just hire more people?
Bureaucratic friction.
Friction.
Yeah, it makes it faster for a manager to approve overtime than to navigate the months-long civil service hiring process.
I guess.
But chronic overtime is a catastrophic long-term strategy.
Yeah.
It is inherently more expensive, yes, but more importantly, It destroys workforce resilience.
Because everyone is exhausted.
Yeah, exactly. When you rely on chronic overtime to meet baseline service levels, you are dramatically increasing the risk of worker fatigue. You are burning out your public servants, which leads to mistakes, injuries, and higher turnover.
Well, how do you fix it? Because you can't just ban overtime, right?
Right.
Emergencies happen. A water main breaks at 2 a.m., someone has to go fix it.
Right. You can't ban it, but you can manage it with data. The study recommends requiring department-level overtime dashboards, creating automated flags for individual fatigue.
Like alerting supervisors.
Yes. So supervisors are alerted when an employee is being pushed past safe limits, and most importantly, enforcing a strict hire versus overtime cost test.
Oh, so making the department prove mathematically that paying the time and a half premium is actually more efficient than just hiring a new full-time employee.
Exactly. Force them to do the math. And you can see why the workforce is drowning in overtime when you look at the sheer volume of reactive work they're dealing with. Let's look at a legal dumping response. Between 2016 and 2020, there was a 450% increase in service requests for illegal dumping.
450%?
Oh, yeah.
And you also have a situation with animal services. A 2023 snapshot showed that 5 out of 6 city animal shelters had dog populations operating above their maximum kennel count capacity.
They are completely overwhelmed.
Both of these sound like systems that are just drowning in demand.
They are drowning because the city is stuck in a reactive posture.
How so?
Well, with illegal dumping, the cleanup demand is skyrocketing, but the enforcement side is totally fragmented. You have sanitation cleaning it up, streets involved, LAPD, the city attorney.
Everyone has a piece.
Right. And the actual proactive prevention capacity is incredibly thin. So the city is paying crews to constantly clean up the exact same alleys.
Whack-a-mole.
It's whack-a-mole.
So the Pareto fix is to stop playing whack-a-mole. Build a unified enforcement strategy, expand targeted surveillance in the worst dumping hotspots, and actually fund prevention so the trash never hits the street in the first place.
Yeah.
But what about the animal shelters? How do you apply this logic to a crowded kennel?
The overcrowding is essentially a bottleneck problem. If 5 out of 6 shelters are over capacity, it degrades the daily care standard for the animals. It actively hurts adoption pathways because the facilities are overwhelmed.
And it probably increases liability for the city.
Exactly. The fix requires clearing the bottlenecks. You match the staffing to mandatory daily care standards. You improve the throughput of volunteers.
Meaning make it easier and faster for citizens who want to volunteer to actually get trained and get into the shelters to help.
Precisely. Remove the red tape. You also prioritize public-facing placement visibility so the animals get adopted faster. You are managing the flow of the facility, not just reacting to the overcrowding once it happens.
It's incredible how much of this comes down to just unblocking the pipes.
It really is.
And sometimes the pipes are blocked with cash.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the Systematic Code Enforcement Program, or SCEPrep.
Right, SCEP.
This is a vital renter protection program that inspects buildings. But during the audit field work, the reviewers found so much dormant money that they reversed $138 million in unneeded appropriations and encumbrances.
Now that term, encumbrances, is important to define.
Yeah, what exactly is an encumbrance?
Well, in municipal finance, an encumbrance is money that a department has legally reserved for a specific contract or purpose, but hasn't actually spent yet. It's walled off.
Oh, okay. So they walled off $138 million that they didn't actually need to tie up.
Yes. And while they were hoarding that cash, the SCE program was suffering from massive refund backlogs. Furthermore, they were experiencing inspection cycle drift.
Meaning they were falling behind schedule.
Exactly. They were not inspecting buildings as frequently as the law requires.
So you have a vital safety program that is failing to do its job on time, failing to issue refunds to the public, while simultaneously sitting on a mountain of cash it doesn't need.
It is quite something.
The dysfunction is almost impressive.
It's a textbook example of weak fund controls. The recommended correction is to force the program to align its fee structure to its actual real-world inspection capacity. Reconcile those financial liabilities and publish the cycle time performance.
Meaning how long it takes to inspect a building.
Right. Broken down by risk band. Make the performance public so the money matches the reality of the work.
Okay, so we have mapped out an unbelievable landscape of dysfunction. We've found over $348 million in surface area where capacity, enforcement, and cash are just leaking out of the system.
A lot of leaks.
But here is the ultimate question. How does a massive, entrenched bureaucracy actually implement these Pareto-style corrections without this study just becoming another 300-page PDF gathering dust on a government server.
That is the most critical part of the entire docket. The final section lays out a very strict 90-day blueprint for structural reform.
A 90-day agenda.
Right. It's an agenda designed to force the city to convert this map of inefficiencies into an actual governing work plan.
The first step seems so obvious, but it's probably terrifying for a politician. Step one is to publish an efficiency docket. They want the city council to maintain a highly visible public list of these specific programs where audits have identified this idle money and wasted capacity.
Because visibility is the only way to force accountability.
Right.
You cannot fix what you are allowed to hide. Once the docket is public, step two requires the owner departments to answer with numbers.
No vague promises.
No vague promises. They cannot come to the council and offer assurances that we are looking into it. Each department has to report their current numerical baseline, the specific process intervention they are going to test, the exact metric that will improve, and a hard date by which the public can verify the change.
Wow, so you were holding their feet to the fire with math.
Yeah.
But step three is where it gets really interesting, because it goes against every instinct of a budget hawk.
Yes, it does.
Step three dictates that the city must move dollars only after the process fixes are defined.
That is the golden rule of a Pareto correction. Reallocation should never be a blunt cut.
Why not?
Because if you just slash the budget of the LA Housing Department because they aren't issuing Tahoe citations, you haven't helped the tenants. You've just defunded the department.
Oh, I see.
The goal is to preserve or even improve the public purpose like tenant protection or housing the homeless or inspecting buildings while simply removing the administrative mechanism that is causing the leak.
You have to fix the pipe first. And only then do you reallocate the saved water.
Perfectly said.
And the final step is treating this as a permanent discipline. Repeat quarterly. You don't just do an efficiency sweep in 2026, pat yourself on the back, and go back to business as usual.
It has to be a cultural shift. You are training an entire municipal bureaucracy to constantly look for wasted capacity instead of constantly defaulting to asking for new funding.
Which brings us right back to you listening to this deep dive right now.
Right. Why does this matter?
Exactly. Why should you care about the weeds of the Los Angeles municipal budget? Because this Pareto standard is a shockingly powerful lens for absolutely everything. Whether you are prepping for a boardroom meeting, managing a startup team, or just sitting at your kitchen table trying to run your own household budget, it trains your brain to look for the leaks.
The application is totally universal. Before you assume you just need more money or more time or more staff, you have to ask yourself a harder question.
What's that?
Am I actually fully utilizing the resources I already possess? Am I suffering from a genuine resource problem or am I suffering from a coordination problem?
Are you paying for the availability of a bed or are you paying for the occupancy? Are you sending polite educational letters when you should be building a system that issues citations? Are you treating your high-cost assets like default tools?
It really shifts your perspective.
It does. And I'm going to leave you with this final thought to mull over. If a single municipal government can uncover $348 million in hidden value simply by rigorously auditing its leaks, its unused beds, and its forgotten accounts,
yeah.
Imagine applying this exact same framework to your own life.
Yeah.
Look at your own daily routine, your own business, your own bucket. What idle special funds or overused helicopters are hiding in plain sight, just waiting to be reallocated?
It is definitely a question worth asking.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.